Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast, where we cover timely topics related to the current economic environment and keep you up to date on investment news. We also provide insights on how investors can maintain a long-term perspective. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
So I remember starting to have back problems at age 17. Spasms, weakness. I think the worst thing that happened during that time, though, was when my dad offered to buy me a Chevy Camaro with a Hurst manual transmission as a high school senior. Can you imagine? But my back couldn't take the bucket seats. I ended up in a Cutlass sedan. It was miserable. My back problems came and went with various non-surgical treatments for more than 20 years. I'd have weeks where I could hardly move. Finally, I started having so much nerve pain, surgery was needed. My doctor suggested we try the least invasive option because advances in the science of spinal surgery were happening at the time, and he thought that if I could just get by for a few more years, that there was some promising research that might work for me. Finally, in my late 40s, I needed a spinal fusion surgery at two levels. A company called Medtronic had developed a bone morphogenic protein, something they called BMP, that orthopedic surgeons had adapted for a new treatment method that had been tested with good results. The herniated or ruptured disc causing the nerve impingements would be removed, and the BMP material would be inserted into the area that had previously been occupied by the disc. This BMP would then create a permanent fusion of the vertebrae, so there'd be no more disc to bulge, herniate, or rupture and press on the nerves. By waiting for the science to advance, my surgical outcome now had a much higher probability of success. 2 years post-surgery, I was able to ride my bike, swing a golf club, and work around the yard in ways that seemed impossible just a few years earlier. You know, I'm a big fan of advancing with science. In medicine, the advantages are both more treatment options and higher probabilities of successful patient outcomes. Like medical advances in treatment options, many fields advance with science. Agriculture has been revolutionized by science so that food production is at levels unimagined just decades ago. Computer technology has given us more computing power in our handheld phones than was available in entire buildings of equipment just a few decades ago. Economics, finance, investing, and human economic behavior are other fields where the benefits of advancing with science are unmistakable. You know, at Foster Group, we have five principles for investor success. They are: construct plan-driven portfolios, embrace uncertainty, trust markets, advance with science, and avoid predictable mistakes. Just to restate number four, we believe that investors have higher probabilities of good investment outcomes if they continue to advance with science. Not that the Nobel Prize is the most important standard of scientific research, but the Nobel laureates throughout the years have been some of the most outstanding and innovative thinkers, artists, and scientists in their fields. The first Nobel Prize in economics was awarded in 1969. Since then, there have been numerous advances in economics, finance, and behavioral economics that have led to greater understanding of how markets and asset prices work, how risk plays an important part in the process, and how the behavior of human beings impacts our experiences, both as individuals and groups. Harry Markowitz won for work published in 1952, William Sharp for work published in 1973, then Robert Merton, Myron Scholes, Fisher Black, they won based for some work on options pricing and derivatives. Eugene Fama won for his 1960s work on market efficiency and pricing. And Daniel Kahneman and later Richard Thaler won for their career work in behavioral finance and economics. You know, these sea changes in finance of these advances by these Nobel winners and others are summarized in Peter L. Bernstein's two books, Capital Ideas and Capital Ideas Evolving. Bernstein gives a chronology and then he gives insight to these discoveries, beginning with Markowitz. And he observes that, quote, the practice of investing that prevailed before Markowitz wrote Portfolio Selection in 1952 has vanished. He's talking about today. The investors of 1952 thought the same thoughts and talked the same language as the investors of 1873. What Bernstein is saying is that really investing, or the science of investing, had not changed since 1873 until Markowitz came along in 1952. So how do we as investors advance with science? Well, let's try these. First, I think we need to be aware of fads masquerading as science. You know, the saying, if you torture the data long enough, it will confess to anything, summarizes a lot of bad science and bad ideas, including investment ideas. Science that is truly advancing the field comes from great data, solid research practices, and the findings that are generally able to be replicated by others doing the same kinds of research. Ultimately, they appear in peer-reviewed academic journals. This means that the idea has stood up to testing and it stood up to some time. We want real evidence before proceeding with real money. Secondly, we want to ask, does the finding or idea make sense? While it may be very new, the best financial and economic ideas need to make some sense when they're explained well. Here, take some time to name your priors, those foundational ideas that you don't want to let go of easily. One example in investing is that generally risk and return are related. This means that promises of high returns with minimal to no risk should be greeted with a lot of skepticism. Some things that sound good and look shiny at the outset, well, they just lose their luster with time. Oxford English professor and philosopher C.S. Lewis, who's a favorite of mine, he coined the phrase chronological snobbery in the 1940s. He said it was, quote, the assumption that whatever has gone out of date is on that account discredited. And then he went on to write, the most recent is not necessarily the best. It is still on trial and has yet to be assessed properly. In other words, the latest is not always the greatest. An example of the latest things proving not to be the best things include the dot-com bubble of the late 1990s, where companies associated with the internet, the World Wide Web, the dot-com world, did not need to show a path to profitability to see their stock prices rise dramatically. The theory then was that anything associated with this new technology, well, it was just bound to succeed. Well, this bubble burst in 2000, wiping out many of the dot-com names and literally billions of dollars of investment and investor capital. Then there was the great financial crisis, which featured the advanced science, quote unquote, of blending high credit quality mortgages with very low credit quality subprime mortgages and calling this newly combined package of loans a CMO, or a collateralized mortgage obligation. Now, the bundlers of these would point to the high credit mortgages in the pool, in the package, and then convince the rating agency to classify the whole pool as AAA. I know this sounds silly now, but the novelty of these CMOs and CLOs and other new lending practices made it sound like risk was being managed in a whole new way that made subprime lending, previously thought of as very risky, less so. You know what? It was not. This inflated the housing bubble until it finally popped spectacularly in 2007, 2008, taking those mortgage pools down with it. New ideas need good evidence, and they should make some sense. Finally, in advancing with science, there is the cost question. A lot of research in finance is done in the rarefied air of academia, where concepts can be developed and tested in a context that ignores the costs of implementation. In the real world, though, investors' costs can include taxes, transaction costs, and opportunity costs. A good example of a concept that worked in the data but did not seem to work in real life was investing based on something called systematic momentum. Stock price momentum, describing how a stock's price that is rising or falling, it just tends to continue to do so for a limited period. Well, it was undoubtedly in the data. You could see it. But to capture that momentum required a lot of trading. In the 1980s, when investors paid $50 to $100 or more per transaction, the cost of trading hundreds of stocks every quarter was just prohibitively expensive. Then factoring in taxes, all the capital gains that would be realized while this strategy looked great in academia, it could be lousy in the real world. But in the last few years, recently, large Wall Street brokerage firms, they've started to waive transaction fees on stock trades, and the development of exchange-traded funds created an opportunity to defer realized capital gains associated with trading. These changes remove the cost obstacles such that momentum, which was in the data and made some sense, finally became a viable strategy, advancing with science, but now at a reasonable cost. You know, we started talking about the value advancing with science in the area of medicine, specifically spinal surgery. When you're contemplating something that invasive, you want the most advanced science, the best research firmly on the side of whatever treatment option you're considering. The same should be true in how we invest. Our investment assets are needed to support us for who knows how many years. We should want the evidence firmly on our side, and we should be on the lookout for genuine advances in science that raise the probability of our success. I like this quote by Immanuel Kant, where he says, "Science is organized knowledge, and wisdom is organized life." The wise investor will look to advance with science. You know, there's a lot of noise out there trying to get your attention. Elections, inflation, markets all provide source material for the promotion of fear and worry. But investors who are advancing with science are choosing educated optimism as an antidote for anxious uncertainty. Educated optimism can be of great help enabling investors to embrace the uncertainty that is with us all the time. You know, our goal for these podcasts is to contribute to you becoming educated and prepared optimists. And if there are topics or questions you'd like us to address, please let us know at our website, www.fosterngrp.com, and click on the words Financial Perspectives. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, you can help us spread the message of educated optimism by liking us on your podcast app. As always, thanks for investing some of your time and attention with us today.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.